There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
London Philharmonic?
It's Venus.
Huh?
Venus.
Why not? We bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it, the other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Hello and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. On today's program, media ownership consolidation and how it's affecting and hurting women and minorities. The media watchdog group Free Press released a report this week detailing in stark detail how 96% of media in the United States is owned by whites. We'll look into that. We'll join up with a press call from September 20th, where we'll learn more. We'll also take a bigger look at ownership, because that is the topic of this part of the year. All Media Geeks, stay tuned. Although you'd barely know it by watching the mainstream media, the FCC is currently in the middle of a big review of media ownership regulations. As part of that review, we're still waiting for the commission to release promised research reports that are supposed to provide some basis for whatever new rules the commission will propose. Now there's some reason to believe that we're not seeing those reports, because maybe some of them might not say what the FCC's Republican majority wants them to say. In the last 2 weeks, California Senator Barbara Boxer has uncovered two different FCC research reports on ownership that were never released to the public. On September 14th, it came to light that back in 2004, the FCC suppressed a report that suggested media ownership consolidation has a negative effect on local TV news coverage. Former FCC Media Bureau lawyer Adam Kandueb, now a Michigan State University law professor, said that senior FCC officials ordered that, quote, every last piece, end quote, of the report be destroyed. This report surfaced because it fell into the hands of Senator Boxer, who is a member of the Senate Commerce Committee, which just completed its vote on the reappointment of FCC Chairman Kevin Martin to another term at the FCC. The suppressed report analyzed a database of 4,078 individual news stories broadcast in 1998. It showed local ownership of television stations adds almost 5.5 minutes of total news to broadcasts and more than 3 minutes of so-called on-location news. The conclusion is at odds with FCC arguments made when it voted in 2003 to increase the number of television stations a company could own in a single market. The report was written and destroyed under the watch of former FCC Chairman Michael Powell, whose ham-fisted handling of the media ownership issue contributed to his leaving the commission in 2005. In a statement he released on September 18th, Powell claimed that he had never seen the report before it became public on September 14th, and that he, quote, never ordered anything destroyed, end quote. Current FCC Chairman Martin also denies knowledge of the report, as does former Media Bureau Chief Ken Faree. Martin also denies knowledge of the second suppressed FCC report that Senator Boxer brought to light on September 18th. That report is a 2003 annual review of the radio industry that documents in detail the effects of industry consolidation, including a steep reduction in local radio ownership since 1996. Prior to 2003, the year the FCC began its first revision of media ownership rules, the commission released these reviews on a regular basis. But the 2003 review never saw the light of day, and the commission hasn't written another one since, that we know of. Since then, the FCC officially released the 2003 radio report on its website and posted a September 18th letter from Chairman Martin to Senator Boxer, in which he promises to have the Commission's Inspector General conduct an investigation into the disappearance of the two documents. 34 House Democrats have joined the call for an investigation into the disappearing documents that appear to undermine the Commission's push to loosen media ownership restrictions. The group of lawmakers, led by Congressman Maurice Hinchey of New York and Congresswoman Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin, asked the Inspector General to recommend disciplinary action against agency officials if the Inspector General finds evidence that the reports were purposely withheld. And what can hardly be seen as a coincidence, on the same day that Martin's letter was posted, the FCC announced an extension to the comment deadline for its current media ownership review. The deadline had been September 22nd, but many media activists and public interest groups complained that the commission had not yet given the public sufficient data nor released its proposed new rules in time. The new deadline is extended 30 days to October 22nd. At the very least, we know that one of the promised six public FCC hearings on media ownership will happen before that deadline. On October 2nd, a hearing will be held in Los Angeles, where it is expected most of the FCC's five commissioners will be in attendance. However, the FCC's two Democratic commissioners have not been waiting around for the FCC's small number of official hearings. They've been busy traveling the country to independently held forums on media ownership in cities like Milwaukee and Los Angeles. The most recent hearing held in Austin, Texas on September 19th, where FCC commissioners Michael Copps and Jonathan Adelstein heard quite a bit about the lack of local culture on the radio airwaves. In particular, speakers complained about how the locally popular genre of Tejano music is completely absent on Austin radio and how native Texan Hispanics are virtually ignored by corporately owned Spanish media. And this is an issue which is almost a repeat of 2003 in my mind, because there's very little mainstream media coverage, if any at all, about the fact that we're currently in the middle of a review of media ownership rules. And one might guess that the mainstream media has very little interest in the public having much knowledge or being particularly excited about media ownership rules, since they benefit from their being loosened. One of the biggest things that's going to be reviewed by the FCC is whether or not to deregulate the co-ownership of newspapers and television stations. Companies like Tribune, which owns the Los Angeles Times, where it's currently actually having a battle with local management, and also owns the Chicago Tribune, would love to see this done away with so they could be way more into television than they are currently. And then they could also have more newspapers. And basically, the writing on the wall is they want to combine newsrooms and have the TV stations and the newspapers use the same journalists, use the same stories, which seems very efficient, but also cuts down the amount of diversity in the local news. If there's a scandal at the television station or the paper, will the other one cover it if they're co-owned by the same company? And that's just one small little instance of what's going on with this that we're by and large not hearing about. Now, the big problem in 2003-2004 was that then-chairman Michael Powell really refused to hold any public hearings, and then only held one in Richmond, Virginia, when he was pushed not only by public interest groups, but by people in his own party in Congress. There's going to be six this time around, which is more than what was held in that first proceeding. But only one has been scheduled. It may not be in time for the comment deadline. We still haven't seen the research reports, which the FCC will use to justify whatever changes it makes. And of course, now we don't know if we'll see all the research reports, especially if there are ones that are critical of wanting to deregulate media ownership, which is what we presume and pretty much know Kevin Martin and his fellow Republicans want to do. So here we have all this going on underneath the surface, not really in front of the public. There was a really active grassroots mobilization around media ownership in 2003 that brought an unprecedented number of comments from the public to the FCC about that issue. And I know that media activists right now are trying to bump that up again, although it doesn't seem to have the same momentum that it did back in 2003-2004, which is very much to the liking of the FCC and to the large media companies, which like to work the back rooms much more so than the public arena. And so this is a moment when we will see our media landscape possibly change. And a lot of people say, well, what's the big deal? We have the internet. We have a much more broad number of channels. We have satellite television, cable television, all these other things. He said all these companies that are involved in broadcast are some way involved in all these other media outlets. And ownership in our mainstream broadcast media does affect ownership in all these other arenas. And the amount of diversity that we have in all these other arenas and in broadcast also affects the diversity that we have in these other arenas. This is not just broadcast versus everything else. It's one large media environment that we're in the middle of. And what happens in broadcast should give us some indication what will happen elsewhere. Whether or not we may have 100 channels, but how many of them, what percentage of them will be owned by a single company. News Corporation owns DirecTV, which is a satellite broadcast company. What percentage of DirecTV channels will be permitted to be owned by News Corporation? Or if you're a DirecTV subscriber, will you be permitted to get any channels not owned by News Corporation? As these companies perhaps start to get in bed with AT&T and Verizon or Comcast, how will these sorts of alliances and co-ownership affect what we get on cable, what we get by broadband? These are all interconnected issues. And that's why it may seem like, oh, broadcast, that's so 20th century, may seem unimportant. Is why we have to keep our eyes on it at this point. And you are listening to Media Geek, your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media. I'm your host, Paul Reese-Manel, and today we're really making that critical examination of our media environment. You can check out Media Geek online at MediaGeek.net. You can get the radio program online at radio.MediaGeek.net. You can download it in MP3 with the Ogg Vorbis format. I am tongue-tied today, man, let me tell you. Or you can subscribe to the podcast so you get automatically downloaded to your computer or MP3 player, whether you miss it on the broadcast radio or you just want to catch it again, or maybe you're one of the listeners who only hears it on the internet. However, it's all good. If you get any comments about the program, anything you'd like to hear more about or less about, send them to me, please, paul@mediageek.net. So moving forward with more about ownership, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, the media advocacy organization Free Press just released a study called Out of the Picture, which examines media ownership by minorities and women, and finds out that, amongst other things, 96% of media ownership in the United States is white, which is far greater than the percentage of white people in the United States. On September 20th, Free Press held a national press briefing to talk about this study and to talk about its relevancy in the current political and economic climate. So we'll hear from Derek Turner, who is research director of Free Press and a co-author of the study, along with Mark Cooper from the Consumers Union, another co-author of the study. We'll hear from Commissioners Michael Copps and Jonathan Adelstein of the FCC. We'll hear from Gary Flowers of the Rainbow Push Coalition, Janet Merguia, president of the National Council of La Raza, and David Honig, who is the executive director of the Minority Media and Telecommunications Council. So we will now go to audio from that national press briefing on September 20th on minority media ownership.
This is a very important study, but it is one that we should not have had to write. The FCC has the duty and responsibility to monitor as well as foster female and minority broadcast ownership, but the FCC has failed. Our research shows that despite gathering data on the gender, ethnic, and racial makeup of broadcast and radio television owners since 1999, the FCC has done very little with this information and has put out deeply flawed so-called summaries of this data. This study is the first step towards correcting these serious problems. The results are very troubling. I will describe just a sample. Women comprise half the U.S. population but own just 5% of all stations. Minorities make up a third of the population but own just 3% of all stations. There has been a decrease in minority ownership since 1998, despite the fact that the total number of stations has increased by more than 12%. Given the history of prejudice and discrimination in this country, it is not surprising to learn that the level of TV ownership does not reflect the general population. But these numbers are still paltry when compared to other sectors of the economy, where female and minority ownership is much closer to their proportion of the general population. We also tracked minority ownership since 1998 and found that consolidation pressures brought on in part by FCC regulatory policy are a key driver of the lack of progress in minority ownership. Over half of the stations lost since then were sales that would not have been permitted under stronger ownership rules that were changed in the late 1990s. We found strong statistical evidence that shows minority-owned stations exist in more competitive markets and that increasing market concentration will likely decrease the level of minority ownership. Finally, we found that minority-owned stations reach a very small number of minority viewers. There are many TV markets where minorities make up the majority of the local population but own no broadcast stations. Latino-owned stations just reach 22% of the nation's Latino homes, while African-American broadcasters reach just 9% of African-American homes. This study should give the FCC pause. Before it moves forward with any rule changes that will increase media concentration, it should fully study and consider the impact of these changes on female and minority owners. The evidence shows that clearly that further consolidation of media ownership will obstruct and reduce minority and female ownership of broadcast television stations. I will now turn it over to my co-author, Dr. Mark Cooper, who will briefly describe some of the more important implications of the study in the context of the current media ownership proceedings of the SEC. Mark?
Thanks, Derek. For years, we have had good qualitative evidence on the linkage between ownership concentration and the lack of minority ownership. Greater concentration makes it more difficult for minorities to own TV stations. This is the first study to show that relationship directly, and it does so in two ways, both with high-level statistical data that makes everybody's eyes glaze over, but also with a detailed analysis of which stations were sold and which stations were bought by whom and in which markets. So today we can say more clearly than ever, minority ownership of television stations is in a sad state in America, and the FCC policy allowing concentration made matters worse. Thanks a lot, Derek.
Thank you, Mark. And now I'm going to turn the floor over to Commissioner Michael Kopp.
We know we have a problem with lack of diversity in our media. We know we're not reflecting and not nourishing the diversity of our country in our media. And this is really a new civil rights battleground for America, because equal opportunity, like democracy itself, has to be fought for in every generation. In communications, even while some strive to expand opportunity, and even while we recognize we've come a long way in the last 50 years, too often we've fallen far short, and we continue to fall short 6 years into the 21st century. There's just something terribly wrong when women and minorities comprise such substantial parts of the U.S. population, but own so few broadcast television stations. This isn't just a problem, it's a national disgrace, and we wonder why the depictions of minorities and women in our media are so often distorted. We wonder why issues of importance to our many diversity communities don't get the attention they need if they're ever going to be resolved. So it's time to be frank and fess up. Ownership rules, and unless and until we do something targeted to increase minority ownership, our communication sectors will continue to underserve the great promise of America. And that doesn't just cost minorities, but it costs all of us because it's such a denial of our nation's potential.
Thank you, Commissioner Kopps, and thank you for making an effort to be here today. And also a special thanks to Commissioner Adelstein, who made a great effort to be here today. And we'll now turn the floor over to him.
I think that this study is very refreshing because it shows that we have a real problem. And what the FCC apparently has been doing is burying studies that reach conclusions that don't meet the interest of the media giants that we oversee. So it's refreshing to get a study that's not pre-cooked, a study that's independent, and it shows the numbers are getting worse. Now, it's interesting to note that the National Telecommunications Information Administration, NTIA, Department of Commerce, has stopped collecting data on minority ownership of media outlets. And perhaps it's no coincidence that the same time they stopped collecting the data, the situation is getting worse, as this study shows. I think it's time for the government to start putting out the facts, stop hiding the facts, and to let the public know and not leave it up to well-intentioned and excellent public interest groups like those who have done this study to do the job that the government should be doing. We have an obligation not only to report what's happening with regard to the decline in media and women ownership of media, but to do something about that alarming decline in ownership. And certainly, I think that allowing more media consolidation will only make a bad situation worse. Thank you very much.
This is Janet Murguia, and I'm the president and CEO of the National Council Ad Asa. And at the National Council Ad Asa, we represent the largest national Latino civil rights and advocacy organization in the United States. I think for the first time ever, we finally have a complete and, more importantly, an accurate picture of what the minority media ownership landscape looks like. Ironically, NCLR published a report entitled Out of the Picture more than a decade ago. And while the media situation for Latinos has improved somewhat since then, it is truly disheartening how many of the same issues we are still dealing with today, particularly in the area of minority ownership. And it was dismal then, and it is worse now, despite the fact that the Latino community has grown more than 60% since 1994, and despite being 14% of the U.S. population, the fastest-growing segment of business owners, Latinos own just 1% of television stations. And that is simply unacceptable. You know, this is a critical issue for our community. Latinos continue to be severely underrepresented in the mainstream media in terms of employment, content, and ownership. We believe it has taken a severe toll on how other Americans view our community. And this report confirms what we strongly believe, that increased media concentration has significantly exacerbated this situation, and that increasing diversity in media ownership could help stem that.
I'm now going to hand things over to Gary Flowers of the Rainbow Push Coalition.
Good morning, all. In short, too few own too much at the expense of too many. People of color have been victimized by the American giveaway of vital services, in this case, media ownership. And we are very proud to stand with Free Press as they report what we have always known, and that is that people of color and women are systematically excluded from ownership of the media airwaves. As a result, people of color and women suffer from a dearth of information or accurate information.
Thank you very much. And our final speaker will be David Honig of the Minority Media and Telecommunications Council. David?
Thank you, Craig. This is a profoundly important study that Free Press has issued because it addresses equity and fairness in access to assets in the nation's most influential industry. In addition to being morally wrong, the lack of minority ownership is anti-competitive and inefficient because it deprives American television viewers of what would have been the entrepreneurial, managerial, and creative skills of a third of the nation's people. Free Press's study underscores the fact that when Congress repeatedly insists that a subject is important and it directs the FCC to address it, as Congress has done on minority ownership four times since 1982, the FCC has a duty to perform longitudinal research. Most FCC longitudinal research is very high quality, especially the telephone and broadband reports, but not this subject. The impact of deregulation on competition, diversity, localism, and minority and female ownership, and apply the brakes if deregulation turns out to frustrate those policy objectives. The FCC did not even mention the existence of this proposal or 11 other minority ownership proposals we filed, one of which dates back to 1992 and was on its fourth trip to the commission. In Prometheus, as you know, the court said the FCC had to take up our specific minority ownership proposals. Instead, and almost unbelievably, in the media ownership further notice of proposed rulemaking issued July 24th of this year, the FCC once again failed to identify or describe any of these proposals. We don't think the FCC ought to be violating a direct order from a federal court of appeals, so we filed a motion to shut down the media ownership proceeding and start it over again, doing it right this time. The motion is still pending.
And that is David Honig, Executive Director of the Minority Media and Telecommunications Council, speaking at a national press briefing held September 20th regarding a study released by Free Press called Out of the Picture, examining minority and women-owned media in the United States. And this is Media Geek. Somewhat apropos that, I need to tell you that Kevin Martin, chairman of the FCC, has been approved for renomination by the Senate Commerce Committee by a vote of 21-0. So with all the FCC reports stashed and the problems with minority ownership, it's still hard to kill an incumbent. The Commerce Committee also approved John Neuer to head the National Telecommunications and Information Administration by the same 21-0 vote. And one last little update of some things hanging around for us to pay attention to. One of the big things I've been covering all year has been network neutrality, the battle to save a free internet. And the thing that threatens it is a telecommunications bill that has been passed by the House and still lingers on at the Senate that would create a national franchise for cable television, allowing AT&T and Verizon and other large broadband providers to now provide cable TV services over those lines on an expedited basis without negotiating with local communities and without having to guarantee the free passage of other audio and video content over the internet to their customers. The bill which would do that is still waiting a vote in the Senate. It passed the Commerce Committee, but it can't find 60 votes, which is what the leader of the Senate, Bill Frist, says it has to have so that it overwhelms any attempt at a filibuster or a hold by Senate Democrats who oppose this bill largely because it has no provisions to guarantee free passage of content on the internet in the form of network neutrality. However, Senator Stevens, the sponsor of the bill and the chair of the Commerce Committee, continues to press for it to be passed. He's lobbying aggressively his fellow senators, and he's hoping that maybe the bill will pass during a lame duck session after the November elections. It seems like his fellow Republican senators, many of whom have a pretty tough race on their hands this November, don't want to have the blood of the internet on their hands before they go in front of voters. And so they're going to try and slip this through after the elections so that it won't affect those outcomes. We'll see if Democrats can stem it. But that's what's in store. If you want freedom of the internet, make sure your elected officials know and make sure your friends know what's in store. More information about all this at MediaGeek.net. You can go to SaveTheInternet.com and also StopBigMedia.com for information on ownership. That brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. I'm your host and producer, Paul Riesmandel, and I'll be back in 1 week with more news about grassroots and independent media, as well as our media environment. In the meantime, check out Media Geek online at MediaGeek.net, where you'll find the Media Geek blog with frequently updated news and views about our media. You can also download the program at radio.mediageek.net or subscribe to the podcast to have it automatically downloaded to your computer or MP3 player. That's all at mediageek.net. The closing music is Fire in the Sky by Adam Lowow. Media Geek is produced live at Community Radio WEFT in Champaign, Illinois. Some segments are pre-recorded at Media Geek Studios. And Media Geek is heard on 9 other community stations around North America, including KRFP in Moscow, Idaho, KQRP in Salida, California, KRBS in Oroville, California, WSLR in Sarasota, Florida, WTND in Macomb, Illinois, WRFA in Jamestown, New York, WYQZ in Warrenton-Bealeton, Virginia, CKDU in Halifax, Nova Scotia, and Free Radio Olympia in Olympia, Washington. Media Geek is free to air on your local community radio station, too. Just drop me a line at paul@mediageek.org. That email address is also good for any comments you want to send in about the program. Once again, that's paul@mediageek.org. Thanks for tuning in.